Accession number 20885, Reel 2.
Tom Cook, Reel 2.
Yes, well, from Le Fouché, we'd caught this dreadful train journey in cattle trucks to a place called Aché-le-Grand. From there, that was about dawn, I suppose, we assembled and marched to Grévilliers, which was going to be our more or less permanent base. Grévilliers was about 3 or 4 miles from Bapaume, so the chaps went in occasionally for eggs and chips or whatever. One evening, there was about 11 or 12 o'clock at night, there was a fusillade of shots we heard echoing, and we all shot out and wondered what was the matter. And it turned out to be some of the chaps, fellas coming back from Bapaume with a few drinks, had seen a French car with the usual French yellow lights and opened fire on this car. So they didn't hit it. And when they came before the colonel, the story went, the colonel said, "I'm going to give you a punishment, not for shooting, but for missing." Oh, well. Well, we're under canvas, of course, in Grévilliers, and the job of the battalion was a labour battalion. Well, hardly, you know, we went in trained. And I was lucky, I was in the stores, I didn't have to go, but they were helping to build an airfield about 2 miles away. And the engineers were organising the airfield, and the battalion was the labour force. And they would go off to trot off every day and come back, you know, packed out and have the meal. And then on the night of the morning of the 10th of May, we heard planes flying around, and then we heard gunfire. And of course, this was the start of the campaign, of the German campaign. And we got out of the, got up, got dressed, and went, just stood around. I was in, talking to the guards, and suddenly we heard whistling through the air, and of course it's shrapnel falling from the shells. And I realised I didn't have my tin helmet on, so I shot back in and grabbed my tin helmet and decided to stay inside for a while. I don't suppose the canvas would have done much good protection. And that was it. And the Germans actually bombed the airfield. They thought it was a proper airfield, and they bombed it. And I think hit one of the engineers' places, killing some of the men. And that was the 10th. And then not a lot happened until the afternoon of the 10th, when about half a dozen hurricanes circled over and landed. We could see them landing at the airstrip. And they were there about 10 minutes and left, because they were obviously at the wrong airfield, presumably. That was that. Well, nothing really happened for about 4 or 5 days. We kept hearing stories about the Germans attacking, but we didn't have radio, so we really kept, you know, it's a typical fog of war. We had no idea what was happening, really. And we just carried on in this village, trying to repair the building, and the battalion was trying to repair any damage to the airfield. And the rest of it just carried on our duties, whatever they were, the stores and cooking, baking, that sort of thing. And then I think it was the 16th of May, we were ordered to pack up and move. Well, it was chaos, because we had no transport, virtually no transport. They managed to get hold of a big articulated furniture van, civilian one, and we loaded the stuff up and set off. And we went up to... We'd heard that the story was that the German division had broken through, and General Gamelin, the French commander, was letting the German division go through, and then we were going to cut them off and isolate them and destroy them, you see. And that was the story we got. Anyhow, and they decided that that they wanted the 23rd Division, which was our division, completely untrained, to go and do something. So we moved forward to somewhere near Douai, a place called Eskirchen, I think, and went into a manor house. Now, there was a story, rumour, that it was supposed to be the house where the Duke of Windsor had stayed after he married Mrs. Simpson. Whether, I have no idea. It's just one of the things that rumours got around. Anyhow, we decided, the quartermaster, regiment quartermaster sergeant, decided to go and look for some food and stores. So we set off looking for a, a depot. We knew approximately where some of them were, and we couldn't find anything. And as we were coming back on the Lille Le Arras Lens Road, we were stopped by the greenhouses and they stole our truck. So we managed to stop a French civilian car who took us back to under threat, of course, took us back to Skirchen. We then moved, the battalion then moved down to towards the Canal du Nord. Along the canal, between Pallier and Douai, going south from Douai. And this canal was more or less north-south. And we were at a place called Pallier. And we were stuck there for overnight. And then there were refugees coming through and there were planes in the air and there was bombing. There was occasionally saw a big ring in the sky, like a smoke ring. And one of the stories was that this was a smoke ring put up by one of the German observation planes, so the German bombers could come through and bomb through that ring. Or contrails, of course, but we were just, it was quite ridiculous. And of course, there were refugees pouring through all the villages and things. It was an absolute mess. Two of us were told to go and get something organised, collecting wood, I think, for fire, down a small lane. I remember we saw a couple of shells in the water, presumably left over from World War One. And then when we went back, there was a bit of an alarm that somebody had seen parachutes coming down, and everybody haired off to chase these parachutes, and I was in such a hurry, I'd left my identity disc and taken them off, and left them hanging on a piece of farm equipment. They're still there. Mr. Scott, the officer, the quartermaster, said, well, there's not much use for stores now, we don't know what we're going to do, so you've got a section. So I was given a group of men with a canteen manager, his assistant, the armourer, the shoemaker, a couple of officers, mess stewards, and that was my section. And I was told to report to the company headquarters. I was a bit despondent about having to really fight. I mean, it was awful. I thought I was protected from that sort of thing, but there we are. We went off and reported the company headquarters, and then we're told to march to Arleur, about 6 miles along the canal. When we arrived at Arleur, we found that the stores were already being moved, what stores they were, in the yard of a school. So I spoke to the quartermaster regiment, the RQMS, Billy Gale, and he said, well, the best thing is to hang around and see what happens. You must remember that since I was in independent section, nobody was responsible for me. I wasn't in a platoon, I wasn't in a company, I wasn't in any recognised organisation. So there was a bit of... The village was almost deserted. A lot of people, most of the civilians had disappeared, and shops were being broken open and looted, and... I presume they'd been looted by civilians as well before the army got there. And then that afternoon, the battalion were ordered out of the village to go somewhere else. And I was told that I was staying behind to look after these stores. And there was the regimental quartermaster sergeant, there was the pay sergeant, myself, and my section of about seven or eight men. And the battalion went off and said they'd send a truck back for us. Well, they didn't, of course. And what we didn't know at that moment, that the German army was about a mile and a half the other side of the canal. For as far as I can see, from the studies I've done and the research, we were the bottom of the line. We were right at the bottom of the bag as the Germans came round. And the Germans ignored us, I think, because there was no point in coming trying to cross where we were, because it was marshland nearby. So they went round the corner and turned north towards the Scarpe to attack towards Arras, where our battalion had been sent. Anyhow, we were there that night. Nothing happened. We had no idea what to do. We were just waiting and waiting. We assumed somebody was going to come back for us. And the next thing was, about 3 o'clock in the morning, there was a bang, and we had a shell, or presumably a shell, crash through and explode. And then another one came along and went somewhere other. It finished up in the brewery, actually. It didn't explode. and we did, again, whatever was going on. And we decided to decide what to do. I mean, I didn't know whether I should make a decision or the quartermaster sergeant should make a decision or the player sergeant should make a decision. And we're all quite inexperienced. Except the quartermaster sergeant was a regular soldier. Anyhow, we hung around, and the other person left behind had been the interpreter to the battalion, the French officer, seconded as an interpreter. Although, of course, we had Frank Durant, our French master from the grammar school, was our signals officer as well. But, of course, he'd gone off with the rest of the battalion. And then a French unit came in. I always thought it was the 10th Regiment of Chasseurs, but I've spoken with the French chasseur chargé d'affaires and the French military attaché in London about this, and looked up the records and for other records, and I think it was the 131st Brigade. Well, they'd just come back. They'd retreated, and they were in a bad way. There were a few wounded. They were very tired, unshaven, and obviously they'd been in action for at least a week. They came into the village. So the quartermaster went along and spoke to the colonel of the French regiment and arranged for us to go work with the French. So what they did was they attached two of us with our British helmets to a section of the French army, so that the Germans would think we were very strong. That was the theory, I believe. So I was attached, myself and the shoemaker, who already wasn't an active soldier, well, neither was I, suppose, and we were joined this French section with this French corporal. And they thought British soldiers and British NCOs were very good, and they were very, very good with us, actually. So we went forward to a farmhouse and then moved forward into another farm overlooking the canal. And we were there overnight, but the next morning we went back for food, and the French were very good with food, excellent. The French catering services were excellent. I mean, they had these field boilers, and they'd catch a couple of calves or something, carve them up and dump them up into the boiler and have stew. And the red wine was awful. The Van Horn in there was awful, being a non-drinker, of course. Then there was a bit of shelling going on, but nothing near us. Anyhow, we went back the next night to... we didn't go back to that farm the next day. We were told to occupy a farm in Arles itself. And this farm overlooked a field which led towards the canal. And along the road, going west, south and southwest from us, there was a French machine gun section covering the road there. They expected the Germans would probably come up there, since most of the bridges had been blown, you see, or somehow or other. And then we went to this farm just off the main road. In fact, I've been back. I've got a film of the... I filmed it when I was travelling in France a few years ago. And we set up a post at the bottom of the end of the farm where there was a wall. There was a wall. And we set this French machine gun mitrailleurs up. And we just took 10 to 10 about. Oh, yes. Well, at about... 4 o'clock in the morning, when it was my turn to be on duty with this French soldier, he suddenly said a noise. I mean, he didn't speak any English, and my French wasn't bad, but it wasn't that good. And he suddenly said, "There's something there," or something like that, and opened fire with this gun. Well, I tried to stop him. I didn't know what he was firing at. And the French corporal woke up and said, "What's going on?" or something like that. And I said, "Don't know." And of course, once you start firing a gun, everybody in the area starts shooting. It lasted about 10 minutes, I suppose. And nobody hit anything, as far as I know. Anyhow, that was that night. And I think I managed to get a few hours sleep on a concrete floor with two bricks for a pillow. I think that was my recollection of that night. Then the next morning, he said to me, the corporal said, "I'd like you to come with me." And we walked down towards the main road. And there was a building at the entrance to the farm. And on the corner of the building was a big round stone put there to stop carts rubbing the wall as they went round the corner, to keep the wheels away from the wall. And I was laid there about just after dawn, facing up the road. I was covering a French machine gun nest, which was a machine gun post, which was covering the main road. I was covering their backs. And I was laid there I laid there, and suddenly I heard a sound, and I thought, oh no, what is this? I realised it was a sound of tracks running. Oh my God, it must be a German. I couldn't think of anything else. I daren't move. I daren't get up and look around. I daren't do anything. And I laid there, and suddenly this track stopped, and I heard a clang, and somebody said, "Bonjour, monsieur." It was a little French light tank. Oh my God, I've been so frightened. Anyhow, shortly afterwards, the few planes, we were never really heavily shelled or bombed, because I don't think the Germans thought there was anybody there, the German army. But I remember looking up once and seeing a Messerschmitt fly over about, oh, a couple of hundred feet up. And the plane was at an angle. I remember seeing the pilot, and it flew. It was quite the strangest experience, looking for us. So that was, anyhow, we eventually pulled back to the village itself. We're only about 300 yards, actually, from the main village. That was the first time the whole of us got together again. All of the Brits got together again. And we're sitting having some sandwiches on the bank behind the mill, on the canal bank. And suddenly we're... And shells start falling in the water. Fortunately, not near us. So somebody must have seen some movement, and somebody was shelling us. Anyhow, nobody was hurt, so they shelled for about 5 minutes and then stopped. Then that night, the French were moving out. Now, we were told the reason we were moving out was that there were practices surrounded, but there was a bridge open and out. So the French set off. It was a motorised unit, oddly enough, we're very fortunate. And it just so happens that Taffy, the shoemaker, and myself were the last of our section. So we got on this last truck. And all we managed to pick up to take away from all the loot that was left behind in the cells was a bottle of Rose's lime juice, which we drank neat. We were so thirsty. And then we set off, and after about half an hour, the truck stopped, and the engine had stopped. And we were really in some fear, because you could see the flares and shells going off, you know, over it, not too far away, and there was a sound of artillery. And we thought, well, if this is true, you know, we've just had our chips here. Well, as a French motorcycle cyclist stopped, it was a Peugeot escorting the convoy, as well, and he stopped, and they got the thing going, the car going again, and we set off. And we dozed off for a couple of hours, and we woke up just about dawn, I suppose. I mean, dawn was about 4:30 that time. And it was the rattling. We're driving through a French, small French town with a pavé road, cobbled road. And we're on the right-hand side of the road. I looked out, and coming the other way was a whole train of farm carts, horses pulling farm carts, with French soldiers wounded in, going the other way. Now, I think this must have been somewhere near Douai, I don't know. And we went through one area, we had to drive through between two enormous fires, I remember. And then we eventually finished up at La Bassée, which had been badly hit that day, or the day before. And then one of us managed to, I think the quartermaster managed to contact a British unit. It was the Queen's, the 2nd, 7th Queen's, which is a Croydon, Surrey regiment, right? And we eventually were told to report to them, and a truck came along to pick us up and took us out to a village, which I think is Givenchy, but I'm not sure. I've tried to trace it, but it's very difficult remembering the format. The truck, the 1500-weight truck, came along and took us to a village. I know we drove through La Basse. It was just a shambles, because apparently some sort of ammunition convoy had been caught in the town. And it was really very badly hit. We saw very few civilians, of course. And then we were taken to this small village, which, as I say, which I think is Givenchy. And the quartermaster sergeant found a house, an empty house, which we decided to take over until we knew what was happening. And so we occupied this small two-bedroomed sort of cottage place. We I'm just going to stop for a minute there. If I may, can I just stop? I'll go back. Right. When we arrived, when the trip dropped us off in this small village, we don't know what to do. And we took shelter in a, well, we sat in a shop doorway with a partly in the basement. And suddenly the shells started arriving. We're facing a church, and the shells started arriving in the church area. Presumably the Germans thought that they were being used as an observation post. Well, as far as I know, there weren't any British troops anywhere in the area except us. Anyhow, the Billy Gale went out to walk, went across the yard to see something, and the shell landed and he was blown over. So two of us went out to pick him up and bring him back. And he wasn't wounded as such, but he was badly shaken, of course. And I think he was very difficult walking. And then we found there, I think. Then we decided to go into this house and set up, you know, that was our sort of base, waiting to decide what was going to happen. What this Queen's Regiment was going to do with us. And whilst we were there, Dudley Spencer and I, Dudley, another chap from Hull, Dudley Spencer, he and I went out to buy some bread to a bakery's. And of course, baking was a very difficult problem then because of the refugee business. We went to this bakery and the lady was giving one loaf per person, that's all. So one small French loaf per person. And there was a lot of criticism because Dudley and I spoke to two French girls who had come from a village some distance away, and all the villagers were moaning that these foreigners, these strangers, were taking their food. They didn't actually comment about the British soldiers getting it as well. That was it. Anyhow, we went back to the house, stayed the night. The next morning, a guide came to take us out to the platoon we were going to be working with. And as we were walking along, we were parallel with the canal, but about 200 yards away from the canal, but parallel with the canal, and walking behind some houses. And just as we coming to an open space, suddenly there was a whistle and a shell landed about 20 yards from us. And obviously somebody had spotted us moving. Some observation type had spotted us moving. And they were dropping shells at us, and we just sort of dived into the ground and tried to bury ourselves. And the shelling lasted for about 5 or 6 minutes. The strange thing was, you suddenly realise that somebody's actually trying to kill you. That was the weirdest thing. Why did this fella? There we are. And so we went, and then eventually we joined this platoon of the Queen's Regiment, a 2nd 7th Queen's. It was the 1st 7th. For a long time I thought it was 2nd 7th, until I did some research here in Croydon of the regiment, and I found the background to it. So we were attached to the 1st 7th with an officer called Keith, in a detached house about 100 yards from the canal. And the Queen's had actually been in action on the Belgian side and been moved over, so they were more experienced than we were in warfare. We were then the officer then took us forward, about 10 of us forward, to dig trenches, slit trenches in the field, in the middle of the field nearest to the canal. I was a bit concerned because I didn't know how we were going to get out once we were in, if anything happened. So nonetheless, we started digging these trenches. Then for some reason, he decided to send me back to the house, and I was on the roof of the house doing artillery spotting forward artillery. I didn't know we had any artillery. If we had, I'd never saw any of it firing. Then I could see in the distance, there was the French army, the French First Army were fighting at, I think, Tournai, somewhere around there, and the Germans were attacking them because there were dive bombers, Stuka dive bombers, came along. No fighter escort. I mean, they didn't need it. Of course, we'd seen no RAF for ages and ages. And the Stukas flew over, and then you see them dip and then dive down, and you watch them. And then suddenly as they're diving, these black things detach from the plane. The plane gets out of its dive, and these things come down, and then you see, you couldn't hear anything at that, but you could see the the explosions going up. And how was that? So we're there until that evening when we're told we're being pulled back. And at that time, I wrote out a field postcard. You'll probably know about these field postcards, you know, which are, has an address on one side. The other side was printed, "I am quite well, I have not received your letter." Most of us wrote, "Well, I have not yet received your parcel." But I sent one of these field postcards to America, to my pen pal in the state of Washington, Pacific state of Washington. And though the Germans occupied the village the next day, the postcard was delivered. So the French postal service must have just carried on. It was quite strange. Then, so we assembled and marched out, and we started marching north. We then, it was at night time, of course, and you could see on both sides of us, there were a couple of miles away, were shells and shell bursts and flares going up, and you could hear the rumble of artillery. And really what was happening, we were going north through a corridor. Right, and we moved back to. We spent the night in a farm. In the farm, well, let's say the night. We marched for about 3 hours, spent the night in this farm, and then moved on the next day. And we were taken by side roads, not the main roads, because the main roads were clogged with refugees. And of course, the main roads were the ones that were being bombed and machine gunned. This was a tragedy. And we were taking the side roads. So. All in sync, marching in single file, of course, along these side roads, and diving. If we heard any noise nearby, we just dived into the nearest hedge. So we marched to what was it, Nerve, to somewhere, and then we were sent. Our platoon was sent to Nerve Chapelle, just opposite the Indian War Memorial. There's a little road, and we were down this road about 200 yards, and there was a barn. So this was going to be our platoon position. So we, at the suggestion of the armourer, we got bales of straw and hay and piled them up as to avoid ricochets and things. And then Hurst, Butch Hurst, who was our butcher, one of my section, he managed to catch a couple of chickens and started making some food, just throwing things in the pot. And to see what's coming up to boil, we got orders to move out and assemble outside the Indian War Memorial to counterattack. Now, at that moment, my heart just dropped, really. Yeah, well, counterattack was not on. We'd seen a couple of tanks wandering around in the trees, but this was not on. But, of course, they'd crossed the river. They'd got across the river near La Bassée, and they were coming up towards us. And when we hung around then for about 20 minutes, and the attack was cancelled, and apparently it was cancelled, I learnt only a few weeks ago, because the tanks that were supposed to support us didn't arrive. So back we went to survey the remnants of our beautiful meal. Tipped it out. Oh dear. So anyhow, about 5 o'clock in the evening, that evening, we were told to get to the crossroads, and some trucks came along. I think the 27th Brigade had gone through us. We were sort of holding back in sections, you see, and we were the last ones to come up, and some Manchester machine gun regiment trucks came up, and we piled onto those. And off we set. And we weren't attacked at all. We didn't see any attacks until we came to a bridge which had been heavily bombed but not hit. There were bomb holes all around. And above us was one of these Stork observation planes circling. So the corporal in charge of the machine gun said, if a couple of you grab hold of it, we picked this machine gun up with a tripod and everything and held it on our shoulders, and he opened fire. Fire on this plane. We're so fed up of seeing these things bouncing around, and we eventually didn't hit it, of course, but the vibration, the noise was appalling. This gun and the things, empty cartridge cases shooting out behind me, it was weird. Then we were dropped off at a crossroads, and I think there was a Nerf Bakan, BEQIN by then, and we assembled in a field. We crossed the canal and assembled in a field. Facing the canal, and I was told, I was given the Bren gun then, for my section, was told to set out in this field and watch for the road. There were three sections in Arrowhead formation. I was the front one, and first one. And